no amount of liquidity from the Fed's going to save that. What we really need, frankly, is for post the crisis, a strong fiscal response. Is that the Bible basically says life is a set of tests. And the question is whether or not we pass those tests or not. And now is a test for people. And I think the question is, do we pass that test like, you know, human beings? Or do we, you know, look like, do we look like people who we wouldn't admire? Let me put it that way. Well, tests are about moving people out of their comfort zone. I mean, and I, you know, as I said, I think that's the Bible, I think, says life is a test. And if it's all easy, it's not a test.
With the COVID-19 virus crisis and the number of casualties with the flu, if you have not been looking at C60 as a means to significantly improve your immunities by now, you should be. Here's why. First, a strong and healthy immune system is your body's first defense, and for those with a strong immune system, your body will adequately fight viruses without medical intervention. Second, C60 is safe as long as you are taking high-quality C60 with no added fillers or solvents. Third, C60 is the best means of removing free radicals from your body that exists. It's at least 200 times better at this function than vitamin C and any other antioxidant. Fourth, as Dr. Chu Lee stated on a previous show, COVID-19 creates massive amounts of free radicals, which is causing organ failure for those with weaker immune systems. So now it becomes clear you need the best free radical fighter that exists, and that is C60 with black seed oil and curcumin. Why black seed oil and curcumin? Because these two ingredients are the absolute best at supporting C60 to fight viruses and to improve your immune system. Go to sarahwestall.com/shop and learn more about why this formula is so powerful for building your immunities. And it's now available in gel capsules and by diffuser for more serious needs. Be sure to read the research and, of course, use a current coupon to save money when you buy. Patrons also receive a 10% discount. You can find that code at patreon.com/sarahwestall. Remember, keeping you and your family safe is the most important thing you can do.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Scott Shea joining the program. He is the chairman of New York Signature Bank. It's a $50 billion bank. And he's not, it's like the next level down above the too big to fail banks. He has to compete against those all the time. But he wrote a book about ethics and faith and spirituality. And he's doing his book tour, but he's also an expert on economy and what's going on. So I'm like, okay, we got to talk about these issues. And he was game for it. So I'm asking him questions about the market, the bailout, about the central bankers, what their plans are with the carbon tax, and what his views of all that is. And then I also address the Wikipedia article, because in that it says that his bank is Trump's go-to bank. So what is his relationship with Trump? And also Ivanka sat on his board, and so I wanted to understand that. And he explains it, and you know, Ivanka is such a professional woman, and so he talks about how great she is. And then his relationship with Trump and what the reality of that situation is. But he's kind of a breath of fresh air when you talk to him. From a banker talking like this, he was on this personal journey, this 5-year personal journey talking about God and atheism and how God needs to be part of our picture and whatever you think God is, and why it needs to be part of that, and how we are missing the boat. And also, we started talking about the coronavirus and how people can relate to what his journey is. It's just a great conversation. I mean, it's really good at first, meat and potatoes about what we're dealing with. And then we get into some pretty deep conversation about God and atheism in our community and what that means. So it's really good. I hope you listen to this whole interview. And before I get into that, I want to remind you that patrons get a 10% discount on C60, the gel caps. And you know, it's the best, the best at dealing with free radicals and inflammation, which this coronavirus is really what is attacking people. And we also have a 15% discount on Defy Time for patrons, which that's a huge discount based on the how much it's expensive, but that's a pretty big discount. And then the Tetragen, we have a discount, 10% discount on that as well for my patrons. So it more than pays for your support of this channel. And those of you that do support it, I appreciate it so much. And I also want to remind you, you can sign up for my newsletter at sarahwestall.com. I have great articles there all the time on things that I think are really important for people to listen to or to read. I have the statistics from the CDC on what the fatality rate is of the coronavirus versus the regular flu. And then I have a bunch of resources for you on prevention. And then testing, and then what to do if you have it. So it's just a good document that I put together. And you might be interested in what these actual, what the CDC is the actual fatality rate compared to the flu. And you can get that at sarahwestall.com. So let's get into my interview now with Scott Shea. Hi, Scott. Welcome to the show.
Sarah, it's a pleasure to be with you today.
Well, thank you so much for joining me. It's just a crazy time, and you reached out, your PR person reached out to talk to me about religion and atheism and, you know, in this time of in ethics in general. And the timing is such that you're coming on just at a perfect time to talk about this coronavirus and what's going on with the markets. And you being an expert at that, I cannot let you go without addressing all these other issues first. And so I hope you're up for that today, because I really want to pick your brain.
Sure.
Yeah, I really want to pick your brain about what's going on with this market. You know that the Fed did QE. They just announced a $1.5 trillion QE, and the bond market crashed, and it didn't even help the bond market. So what do you think this coronavirus is going to do to our market?
Well, so there's a lot there to untangle. If I could, so I'm gonna have to take it a little bit in pieces. First of all, the Fed is providing tremendous liquidity. So that's good. It's gonna keep, it's gonna keep the system solvent. What's really crashing are not Treasuries or Ginnie Mae's or Fannie Mae's or any of the so-called safer securities. What are really crashing, and it's happening in a sequential manner, are bonds that are backed by companies related to the economy. For example, if you own an airline bond, those spreads are widening out. In all candor, the Fed can keep putting money in the system, and it's not going to help the airline bonds, because people are worried that airlines and hotels and venues, you know, people who are caterers are having everything canceled on them. And so liquidity is good on the one hand, but it's not going to help the basic business issues on the other. And that's really the differential. And I think the Fed is going to need to figure out how to let the banking system and let others support those entities that are having that, whose businesses have just evaporated, literally. I mean, here in New York yesterday, I was due to go to a Broadway show last night, and 3 hours before, I found out that Broadway's canceled for a month. All of those actors are not going to get salaries. All the stagehands, all the people that sell the tickets, the people that are the ushers, it's all the gig economy. And, you know, all of those, anybody associated with all of Broadway is going to be having problems. No amount of liquidity from the Fed's going to save that. What we really need, frankly, is for post the crisis, a strong fiscal response.
And do you think that there needs to be people that are willing to do some give and take? I mean, because this could be an opportunity for people who wish to take and exploit people. And so how should we really be entering this as a American team, if you will?
So look, There's no question. Look, we already saw it with Purell cells and with hand sanitizer and with masks, where buying a mask that would cost $4.99 2 months ago cost $80 today, and that's really bad. I will tell you one thing that I believe to the core of my soul, and that is that folks who are doing something should remember the golden rule. And in the Hebrew scriptures, it's you shall love your neighbor as yourself. It's pretty similar in the Christian scriptures. The way Hillel summed it up, who was lived just before zero, he said, "Don't do unto someone else what would be hateful unto you." In other words, if you do something, the rest is commentary, by the way. If you do something that you wouldn't like done to you, well, it's wrong. And that's absolutely my byword for this time is, you shouldn't be taking advantage. You should be thinking about how you would feel if you were in that other guy or gal's shoes.
Well, and it's an easy time to take advantage, right? I mean, you can charge more for masks. You can charge more for certain food. Hopefully that won't happen, but it could be in that situation for toilet paper, for basic necessities. And this isn't the best time to make a killing, right? I mean,
It's really, look, I will tell you, we have, so as you know, I'm chairman of Signature Bank, and I'm one of the founders of Signature Bank. And we, like every bank, have to have a standards of conduct that everybody has to sign. It's, I don't know if it's yay big, but it's big. And a few years ago, I personally marked it up and put at the top of the, which said, it says, this is your goal. This is the rule to follow. Don't do what would be hateful unto you if it were done unto you, to your clients, to our vendors, to our counterparties, to people who come in off the street. And if you follow that rule, you're going to be okay. Now you have to read the rest because that's the banking regulation, world that we live in. But if you just keep that in mind, that sort of deposit or golden rule is what I call it, you're going to be okay, and we're going to be okay. And people frequently, and it's a big problem, that people think, well, this is permitted under, subsection 4, Article B, little I, two dots C, and therefore I can do it. But they don't step back and, grapple with that fundamental ethic. And I think right now we need to be focusing on that fundamental ethic everywhere, in government, in the business sector, with transparency with other people, with transparency between organizations. And I think that's, look, I wrote this book, the book In Good Faith, and one of the things that I argue, I think correctly, is that the Bible basically says life is a set of tests. And the question is whether or not we pass those tests or not. And now is a test for people. And I think the question is, do we pass that test like, human beings? Or do we, look like, do we look like people who we wouldn't admire? Let me put it that way.
Do we take advantage of people? Well, people are scared. You see things like bail-ins, what happened in Greece. We're worried that banks are going to fail and that bail-ins are going to happen. Companies are going to fail. Do you ever foresee bail-ins happening here in this country? Well, I suppose we need to tell
Well,
people,
look.
explain what a bail-in is.
Well, in basically in Greece, well, it was really happened in Malta in the worst case, where deposits basically had a haircut over and above the insured limits there. But I want to say this, and I can say this with some authenticity, because Signature Bank was the only bank in the entire United States, over 4 billion, not to have a down year during the financial crisis. So we made more money in 08 than 07, more money in 09 than 08, et cetera, all the way through. We never had a speed bump. We've never had a, every year since then, we've had positive earnings. We've never had a quarterly loss. We're a safe bank, and part of that is because of that depositor golden rule. So we didn't do subprime. We didn't do, really much construction loans. We didn't do any CDOs, CDO squares, junk bonds. So we were a safe, we were then and are today a safe bank. But I will tell you that I don't think that the anybody in the United States has to be worried about bail-ins from the banking system now. I really don't think so. The banks are, essentially being, flooded with liquidity. I think the issues are, as I said before, or at least, hinted at before, that how do we actually get the economy going again? How do we get the money to the people? Years ago, I did a TEDx talk. It's a TED talk. It's on TED.com and it's on YouTube about banking by the people for the people. And I think that's really what we need to do here is make sure that relief goes to a huge number of affected individuals. Huge number. I just gave the example before Broadway, but it's in every sector. And I think that's going to be the test. That's really going to be the test.
If people do the right thing, and maybe they have to take a little bit of risk, right, to do the right thing, more than
Right.
they might be comfortable with. Is that what you would say?
Well, tests are about moving people out of their comfort zone. I mean, and I, as I said, I think that's the Bible, I think, says life is a test. And if it's all easy, it's not a test.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, let's talk about derivatives, because a lot of these banks have serious exposure to derivatives. And there, I read an article this morning on Zero Hedge that talks about that they believe that there's a big bank, kind of like Lehman, but maybe Deutsche Bank or another one in Europe, that is ready to collapse or that's doing really bad, some big institution, based on what they're seeing with the numbers. Would you agree with that? Is that something that could be in our
Well,
immediate horizon?
look, I'm chairman of a $50 billion bank. We're in the financial system. It would be, first of all, wrong for me to start, thinking or even hinting that some other bank was in extremis. I don't have any information on anything like that. There are big banks in the world that are. Might have done things that they shouldn't have done. But I can say this in the United States, the big banks, much as I think the big banks are too big, and we competed get all the time against the too big to fail banks, and I don't like it that they are too big to fail, they are well capitalized. So I just don't see here that issue. I can't speak to Europe because, frankly, I don't have as much information about the European banks, but I do know that the ECB and Christine Lagarde is, who's now head of the ECB, has essentially said they'll do whatever it takes to preserve the solvency of the European banking system. So I that's on concerns. That's not my number one concern. My number one concern is how do we ultimately get the economy started again from what is the fastest almost halt that I can remember in my business career. I think that's going to be the big issue.
Yeah, well, we've
And
never seen anything
that's
like
not
this.
simple.
Yeah, we've never, and
It's the
then people are going to be
fastest,
scared. Go ahead.
yes, it is the fastest fall essentially since the Great Depression in terms of the markets,
Now,
which is really scary. That part's scary.
but are the fundamentals strong enough for us to be able to restart it again?
Yes, but I think here is where you go back to the panic can be worse than the disease. I mean, we all tend to, in the story in chapter 7 of Kings 2, once the crisis is averted, so the price of food, it even says, goes way up and then it goes way down very fast. It goes, it whipsaws in the way that markets do. And the person who received this initial news is actually trampled on because of all the people running to get food and to pay for food. And so panic is, I'd say, the biggest concern here, without any question, because people get nervous over the money, over, you know, over their money, over their investments. And, you know, personally, I think now is the worst time ever to sell. You know, I really do. And yet people are selling in huge volumes. I mean, I'm looking over at my screen. People are selling in huge volumes.
Well, wouldn't it have been a good time to sell maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Yeah, we can't. We don't have time machines, so we can't do that if you didn't do it. But yes, if you weren't selling at 30,000, why would you be selling at 20,000? You know, just for round numbers. And I'm worried that some people will, you know, I don't know how many months from now, but X number of months from now, we will be talking about things other than the coronavirus is my prognostication. And then you may be wondering, you know, what you did.
Well, let's talk about what the central bankers have planned, because they're talking about a global digital currency, which I want to ask you about. And then they're also talking about this carbon plan, this green plan, and giving out, having banks loan based on smaller carbon footprints or the size of their carbon footprint. And they're pretty serious about it. And you have Bloomberg, who actually leads this council on that. What do you believe about this green carbon footprint, lending based on carbon footprint?
Well, first of all, it's only being, the central banks are not encouraging that as a broad matter right now. The only central bank really taking a leading position on this is the Bank of England, led by Mark Carney, who I would say is the most sort of green central banker, green carbon oriented central banker in the world. There are groups like the group that Michael Bloomberg formed and other groups, other advocacy groups that are pushing for this, but it's not on the central bank agenda at this point, and not in the United States. I mean, I don't want to say it's not on their agenda, but it's nothing that I've seen anything being actioned toward in the near term.
Do you think banks like yourself would support that?
Well, look, the truth of the matter is banks like ourselves are recipients of regulation. We don't get to determine them. We have to make loans that are safe and secure loans. That's the first thing, you know, you have to do for the depositor. The reason we were safe and secure in the financial crisis is because we only make loans that we're really feeling really, really comfortable we're going to get paid back. Wouldn't make a loan otherwise. And it doesn't really matter to me. And I don't think it, I mean, I think it, what matters most is, can the loan get paid back? Now, having said that, we certainly, you know, there are loans you can make to solar farms, there are loans you can make to renewable energy that are going to get paid back, that have good economics. I have no objection to making a loan with good economics.
Well, but isn't it different?
So
I mean, you're talking business. You're talking business. They're trying to force you to implement policy through the bank and their particular
view. That's a mistake.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a mistake. I would agree if we're mandated to make certain loans that are non-economic because people just want us to make them or policymakers want to make them, that would be a serious mistake. It would be a serious mistake no matter what it is. If people want us to lend to no matter what, that would be a serious, that's how, you know, look, that's how China, China's state-supported industries became grossly over-levered because the banks there are mandated to loan on certain, you know, industries or certain arenas. It's a big problem.
Well, I don't know why you would even want to. I mean, don't tell me how to do my business. I want to loan to the healthiest companies out there, not to somebody you are telling me based on your political policy. I would think that just goes against everything we stand for.
I agree that we don't, you know, we can't make policy by, and the other thing is making policy by mandating bank loans is really messy. I mean, it's not the way to make policy. If you want to make policy and you want to encourage a lower carbon footprint, the best way to do it is with a carbon tax. You know, I'm not judging whether you want to do it or not, but I'm saying there are efficient policy ways to do things. Doing it through bank lending, you know, from a policy perspective, saying you want to, you know, we want to lend money to, you know, X, Y, or Z industries is harder, you know, and it's less efficient.
Well, it's pretty draconian. It's pretty authoritative. Well, now the other thing they said in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, is they're talking about a global digital currency, and they actually went so far as to say the central bank should determine budgets for countries and usurp the governments. I mean, they said this in their speeches. There's multiple people saying that. I think that's almost like an Onion article. It's absurd. What are your thoughts on when you hear something like that?
So back in 2012, when, you know, Bitcoin was first sort of being heard of, it existed before that, but nobody had really heard of it. I wrote an article, which is also on my website, called The Cashless Society, A Great Danger to Civil Rights. And the issue is that if you have one digital currency and everything has to be conducted on that platform for everybody in a country, basically you have total control over that people. Because in the end, look, people are essentially I'm sorry, I ate something. I went down the wrong way before we started. People are essentially economic beings. And everything we do is controlled by our transactions. Adam Smith said that famously. So let's say we have one digital currency. And my doctor says, you know what, Scott, maybe you should cut down on drinking sugary drinks. Or, you know what, I'm the Secretary of Health, and I say everybody should cut down on sugary drinks. Well, I could make it so that you could never actually spend money, because you control the platform, on sugary drinks. I mean, I could say sugary drink, if it shows up that you're buying a drink of over 8 ounces and it's got sugar, no, you can't do that because the transaction will not go through.
Bloomberg,
by the way,
would like that.
If I don't like...
Isn't that what he tried to do?
It was sort of... He did that in New York where you couldn't buy more than 16. But this would be much more powerful.
Yes, exactly.
Much more powerful, because literally I couldn't spend the money. Let's say that on the other end, let's make it even worse. I'm in the government and I like your politics. And I just cut off your access to the payment system. If cash doesn't exist, if some anonymity of transactions doesn't exist, basically, if I cut off your ability to access the payment system or someone's ability, you could starve them to death, because they actually can't make an economic transaction. We're economic beings. That's what, you know, again, Adam Smith said. So there's a tremendous danger to civil liberties. I mean, they already are seeing that in China, where the WeChat platform is certainly monitored by the government. And ironically, one of the reasons that China was, and so there's two sides, like everything, there's two sides to things. One of the reasons China was able to get onto the coronavirus after they waited too long to start was because they had access to everybody who had at least economic interaction. And using AI, they could call somebody who had been in Wuhan, because they had used their, you know, WeChat or Tencent payment system, and say, oh, you may be back in Shanghai or Beijing, but you got to go and self-quarantine. So now, from my perspective, I find that pretty creepy. You know, I don't want the government knowing my every step and every, you know, I bought bubble gum wherever I bought it. And that's really, to me, the real risk of Having a universal currency that's mandated by the government is that you essentially, I called it in the article I wrote on this, you've heard of the term singularity. I called it an econgularity because we'd lose our ability to be independent economic beings. We'd be essentially, on this government or on this mandated platform. And that's scary to me because I think there's a huge benefit to having being able to just transact. And we saw a hint of that, by the way, when the regulators some years ago mandated that you couldn't do gambling transactions on credit cards. So they took various things that you couldn't do. And literally, you couldn't use your credit card or your debit card to, some of that got overturned. But the point is that anytime the government controls every part of your economic being, you actually do lose some part of your humanity.
Well, it's an authoritative move. I mean, any kind of, like the bankers say, whoever, what is it, the Rothschild, who some banker said, I don't care who makes the laws as long as who creates the money, because you have complete control through that kind of, and that's what you're showing. You're showing all these different examples. But they, once you have this digital currency, they can go to the nth degree, making sure they track everything. I mean, now it's just a database query to see who's doing what, and they can do your psychological profile. They can do everything based on that.
Oh, you put that together with your social media profile, and they know more about you than you know about yourself. And I'm not
I
exaggerating.
know that,
What
yes.
the people in, what you, I think you're referring to partially to in Jackson Hole, and this is, last year is, I think the last year and the year before, was that some economists said that the best way to have negative interest rates, and I think this was the context, was that negative interest rates would be the only way it could really be enforced is if there wasn't paper currency, because if currency were all on a central platform, you could say, okay, every month you lose 1% or 0.5% or whatever. Whereas if you have paper currency, people will just take money out, hold the paper, and not have a negative interest rate. And so they were, it's like everything. There is some benefit to it. They thought, okay, if we have negative interest rates on people, people will go out and spend their money faster. On the other hand, you can take not just 1%, but 100% of the money if you have, negative interest rates. So, it's something that I would strongly oppose. Let me put it that way.
Well, do you realistically think that it's going to happen though? Because they talk very openly that this is their plan and this is what they want to move towards.
I don't think it will happen.
There's enough people
I really
fighting
don't.
it in the system
I think,
that, go ahead.
yeah. I really don't.
That's great, actually, to
I
hear
mean,
you
that's
say
my
that.
personal assessment.
Well, I got to ask you, have done a lot of business with Donald Trump, and your bank, and I can see why, because I've done some research on your bank, and you have consistently been rated one or, two maybe, but one in most areas of just having the standards and the integrity and the ethics and all these things. And maybe that's why you wrote your book, which I want to get to. But I got to ask you, because you worked, just in Wikipedia, it says that your bank was Donald Trump's go-to bank. So do you know him well? And what kind of relationship did you have with him?